rulers of the people came to him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things, and who gave you this authority?" Jesus said to them, "I will also ask you one question. If you tell me the answer, then I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. Did the baptism of John come from heaven, or was it of human origin? And they argued with one another, "If we say from heaven, he will say to us, 'Why then do you not believe me?' But if we say of human origin, we are afraid of the crowd, for all regard John as a prophet." They answered Jesus, "We do not know." And he said to them, "Neither will I tell you by what authority I am doing these things." The second reading comes from Matthew, the 20th chapter, the 1st through the 16th verse. "For the kingdom of God is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. And after agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, 'You also go into the vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right.' So they went. When he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same. And about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around. And he said to them, 'Why are you standing here idle all day?' They said to him, 'Because no one has hired us.' He said to them, 'You also go into the vineyard.' When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, 'Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first.' When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received usually daily wage. Now when the first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received usual daily wage. And they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, 'These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat.' But he replied to them, to one of them, 'Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Are you envious because I'm generous? So, the last will be first, and the first will be last." This is the word of God for the people of God.
Well, friends, I got a weird question for you. About how old were you when you first learned that life was unfair? Right? Most of us are probably pretty small, right? Pretty small kids. One of the things that the most adolescent psychiatrists and psychologists would tell you is that the adolescent mind is cyclical. It kind of starts out with mom and dad being the center of the universe, who know everything, who have never in their lives been wrong, and are the rock on which the universe was formed. Then about age 13, mom and dad were never right. They were wrong from the beginning, and they'd never done anything right in their whole lives. And by about age 17 to 20-ish, things start to wane the other direction, and you start to realize that maybe mom and dad could have done a few things differently, but for the most part, turns out they were right. But early on in our lives, probably one of those first moments where we began to question whether mom and dad were truly right and good and just was when we realized that life wasn't fair. If you have siblings, you probably learned this in a more profound way than the rest of us, right? Because I remember growing up and being 9 years old, and that was old enough to do certain chores. But when my siblings were 12 years old, they still weren't old enough to do them, right? I remember the life being unfair as a kid growing up with siblings, because as the oldest, there always seemed to be a higher level of accountability, right? Because your brother and sister look up to you, right? So there was this level of accountability, this idea that was so unfair to me as a kid that I had to be better and behave better than they did. And as any kid can tell you, behaving is not fun, and that's not exactly what we're looking to do. But life still isn't fair, even today as adults. Something at some point in your life, I'm sure somebody's told you that life doesn't ever get fair, or life is never fair, right? Today, two people can work equally hard and make vastly different amounts of money. Today, people can have opportunities taken from them. People can have opportunities given to them. We talk a lot in this country about how hard work can get you anything, and that's one of the greatest things about this country and some other countries is that when we work really, really hard, we can achieve a lot. But there's a thing called opportunity, and loath as we are to admit it, not everyone has the same opportunities. Take, for example, the foster kid who has a different mom and dad every 2 or 3 years. Some of those parents abused him. Some of them abused drugs and alcohol. He had to work through high school. He lived on his friend's couch. In college, he did go to college, but he had to work 2 jobs to put himself through it, and he had obtained a degree from a community college and got a low-level, entry-level job because he really had no guidance growing up. Didn't take, for example, the kid who had 2 educated parents who helped him with his homework, who got him into a good school, who paid for his education, and who used their connections to land them that important first job. Both of them had to work hard to get where they are. The kid who had a lot of opportunities, wouldn't have gotten anywhere without his own hard work. But the opportunities were different because life isn't fair. Through no fault of their own, each of these examples or kids had a different way of growing up and had different opportunities. And kind of from the beginning, their lives were headed in different directions. And that's life. Life isn't fair. And on this side of heaven, I don't think it ever will be. The parable that we're ending our series with might seem odd to end our series with, but I think it's an important one to launch us into Lent. And it's the parable of the workers in the vineyard. We've already talked about workers a lot. We've talked about vineyards a lot. We see a lot of these central and common themes. But the story is that the vineyard owner needed some help, so he went around his community looking for help. And every community had a marketplace. Kind of true today, right? Main Street's kind of our marketplace. If you're going to meet somebody, where do you meet them? Probably Lewis Cafe, right? That really is the marketplace. The market square for St. Clair is Lewis Cafe, and that's where people meet. And in the marketplace, of course, you had folks standing around looking for work, right? Whether they had no job of their own or were day laborers without specific skills, they were just there ready to work if anybody would hire them. So at the first thing in the morning, crack of dawn, the vineyard owner walks out and says, "Look, I've got a big project going on, and I don't have enough help. I'll pay everybody a day's wage to come and help me." And so he says, "All right, you, and you, let's go." Then about 9 o'clock, it becomes apparent that it's not going to get done in time. And so he goes out and he hires a couple more. By noon, he realizes he's still behind. So he goes out and hires a couple more. By 5 o'clock, he thinks, "We're almost done, but if I hire a couple more, I can have these guys home by 6, right? So he goes out and hires a couple more. At the end of the day, he tells his manager, he says, "Go out and pay them one by one, but line up the last first and the first last," right? So the guys who got there at 5 were the first to get paid, and he paid them 1 denarius. We've been talking about this a lot in our Tuesday night group, about first century life and what 1 day's wage meant, right? It was enough to survive for a day, right? We've been talking about that a little bit. It's enough to survive for a day. We compared that a few weeks ago on Sunday morning to like somebody earning 1 day's wage below poverty level today, right? Just enough to survive, just enough to pay the bills for a day, just enough to eat for a day. Not enough to save, not enough to put away in your 401k, not enough to buy a home, enough to eat today, right? So he pays them their denarius, and you can imagine the folks who got there at 9 o'clock. They're getting kind of excited, and he pays them a denarius too. Now, they don't say anything, at least not that's recorded in Scripture, right? Or at least not that Jesus told us in the story. This is a story, made-up story of Jesus to illustrate a point. So he doesn't tell us they say anything. They must think, okay, well, yeah, I guess they were only there a couple hours more than me. So then the guys who got there at noon line up. And then the guys who get there at 9 line up. And then the guys who got there first thing in the morning line up. And finally, those guys are the ones who talk. They say, "We've been here since the crack of dawn, slaving away in the hot sun. Why is it that we get the exact same pay that the guys who got here at 5 o'clock did?" Now, the vineyard owner doesn't really argue with them, right? He gives them some pretty hard-to-beat logic. First off, it's my money. I can do whatever I want with it. Second off, you agreed to this price before you started working. And third, what is your problem? Is your problem that you're not getting paid enough because you agreed to it at the beginning of the day? Or is your problem that I'm generous and that bothers you, right? So he was a little terse with them, and he says, "Look, you don't have any claim to any more than we agreed to pay you. Take your money and go away." It's hard to think of somebody being generous by hiring a day laborer at enough money just to eat for tomorrow, but the truth was he was. And to me, the hint comes when he asks the guys at 5 o'clock why they were still there. They said, "Nobody's hired us." And to me, that says that we're desperate. We've been waiting all day. We just want work. We've been here all day just in case someone comes by like you to give us work. because we're not going to eat tomorrow if we don't work. We need that day's wage, right? It's not a sick day for us. We won't eat tomorrow. We won't feed our families tomorrow if we don't work. I imagine he kind of feels pity for them, and he makes a moral decision. That's what he does. He makes a moral decision, and he says, you know what? No one is going to leave here, whether they've worked here for an hour or 10, without having enough to eat tomorrow. So everyone will get a day's wage. And that's really unfair, isn't it? I mean, it's really fair to the guys who got there an hour ago, but it's really unfair to the guys who got there in the morning. But didn't they agree to the same price at the beginning of the day? That's what's fascinating about these guys, because at 6 in the morning or 7 or 9 or 8 or whatever time it was that they first started their job, a denarius was a fair wage. Sure, that's fair. I'll do that. At the end of the day, when someone else got a denarius, it suddenly wasn't a fair wage anymore. Isn't it funny how we humans are? Most of us, for example, think that we're overworked and underpaid, right? Raise your hand if you've ever felt overworked and underpaid in your life, right? Our teacher's hands went up really fast. Probably well-deserved. But most of us probably are. I mean, that's probably reasonable, because the reality is folks like to save money. They don't like to spend it. And if folks could pay us less, they probably would most of the time. That's just the reality of our world. But most of us feel underworked and underpaid. As a matter of fact, there is a thing called imposter syndrome. And this is really common with people who have very, very important roles, like surgeons, for example, who literally take the life of a patient in their hands. And they begin to think that, am I really the right person for the job? Am I really as qualified as I think I am? Did I skate through medical school, or did I skate through this or that, or were these things handed to me? Did I really earn this? Am I getting paid too much? Am I giving too much responsibility? Here's the thing. Imposter syndrome is a registered psychiatric disorder, right? It's not something huge that would require you to be, incarcerated in a mental facility, but it is something that a psychiatrist is trained to treat. I mean, that's what's crazy is, in our culture, in our world, to believe that you get paid more than you think you were supposed to, ought to require treatment, right? We're so ingrained into this idea that life isn't fair and we don't have enough, probably because it's at least partly true, right? We have to admit that. Probably because it's at least partly true. Probably most of us, whether that was all the way back in high school or even today, have had the experience where we've done the bulk of the work for some boss collecting the bulk of the money, right? We've all had that job, I think. Or if you haven't, praise God that you haven't. And of course, we know all the good arguments. We know that that person put the risk for the capital up. We know that that person put their work in, put their dues in for 30 years before they got to where they are. And that's fair, but when you're the worker in the vineyard who got there at 6 in the morning, it seems unfair, doesn't it? It seems unfair. And that's what amazes me about this story, again, is the flip-flop. It was fair in the morning. I'll pay you a denarius for a day's work. Well, yeah, that's a day's wage for a day's work. That's fair. It was unfair at the end of the day. It was unfair at the end of the day when someone else got paid just as much. Jesus says, so it is that the last will be first and the first will be last. The message is clear. It's about humbleness. And the vineyard owner wasn't paying by the hour. In fact, that wasn't really a thing back then. In fact, the term salary, which we kind of associate with a fixed payment for fixed work, right? Sometimes people talk about salary in an hourly sense, but oftentimes when we're talking about like employees, we talk about hourly and salary as two different things, and those who earn a salary get a fixed payment every 2 weeks or month or whatever for a fixed amount of work. And the term salary actually comes from Rome, from the Salt Road, and historians aren't quite in agreement on where that comes from. Some historians say it was an allowance for salt, right, a salaria, an allowance for salt. The idea being one of two things, either that they could sell the salt or that's how they would adjust for inflation or adjust for cost of living, like we would say today, right? So today, many, many government agencies, for example, pay based on the cost of living index. So they pay government workers, give them raises as needed based on what the cost of living is. In Rome, I guess they kind of use salt as the cost of living index. If salt was getting more expensive, they got paid more. What they got paid was a gold coin called the solita, which is actually where the term soldier comes from. Now, like I said, there's a little split because some historians think it wasn't about salt, but it was about the salt road. They were paid a salaria, a salary, for guarding the salt road for a day. One day's salary, one day's work. Now, I'm not a historian, so I'll just let you kind of decide which one sounds like it makes more sense to you, and then you can go tell all the historians why they're wrong. But I'm sure one of those guys has got to be right. But either way, the same notion is there, that everybody pretty much got a day's wage in that time period. That's how things worked. You got paid for a day if you worked for a day. You didn't get your employer didn't get to hold the money by for a couple of weeks, invest it, and earn some interest on it, then give it to you. you got paid for a day when you finished a day's work. Of course, the Roman soldier got paid a lot more than a day laborer, but you got paid for a day. And that's what the vineyard owner was doing. The vineyard owner was paying for a day. It might have been reasonable for the vineyard owner to pay a portion of a day's wage for a portion of a day's work. But because a day's wage for these men was so tied to their livelihood, he chose to pay them for the full day. For whatever reason, he chose not to give a raise to the ones who got there early, but he chose to pay them for the day. So as the workers in the field, where do we go? The obvious and easiest takeaway is that we're called to be humble. Maybe we take that one step further, that we ought to celebrate the success of others, right? Isn't that kind of one of the greatest examples of being humble, when we celebrate the success of others? And that can mean a lot of different things. When we celebrate that someone else has received God's grace, rather than saying it's disingenuous or it's not fair because I've worked hard for God my whole life and they've just decided now after a lifetime of crime that they're going to be a Christian now, right? And we hear that all the time. Maybe we get excited when our neighbor gets something that we couldn't afford or that we can't have. Maybe we get excited for them and say, wow, good for them, instead of, gee, I wish I had that, right? What is humbleness? And I think humbleness is more than just saying, no, I don't need that. I think it's saying, I'm really happy you have that, right? And that's really hard to do. It takes a lot of pride swallowing. And you'd think that the guys who'd gotten there first thing in the morning would be empathetic because they were in the same position, right? Nobody there was there because they had a full-time job. If they did, right, they would have been at their full-time job. If they were fishermen, if they were shepherds, if they were owners of their own vineyards, they'd be there. They're there because they have nothing and they're desperate for work, right? To prevent even the notion that one of these guys could have been working all day at another job and was just picking up an extra hour of work for extra money, the guy asks him, what are you doing here? And they said, we've been waiting all day and nobody's hired us. They're all desperate. You'd think that those who'd gotten there first would be empathetic of that, realizing that these people who'd gotten there later were in the same position they were. Without that coin, they weren't going to eat. But there's kind of this notion that it's not fair. This notion that it's not fair. Remember last week, worry doesn't add an hour to our lives, what Jesus tell us? Neither does envy. Instead of complaining that someone else has gotten someone they haven't deserved, we give thanks to God that they've experienced an unearned joy in their life. Surely all of us have had an experience in our life where we've received unearned joy, right? Received a gift we didn't deserve. We got something that we didn't earn, that we didn't put the full day's work for. And if you think you haven't, just imagine where you are right now. You're here in the church. You're here celebrating a God who gave you the grace through Jesus Christ that was unearned and undeserved, and that was paid before any of us were even born. The vineyard is often often interpreted to talk about conversion. But in my mind, when I read this parable, the conversion moment kind of happens when they're standing in line for the manager, right? Standing in line waiting for the coin, waiting for the grace of God. When we accept God's grace, that's kind of where we're receiving it. The vineyard, I think they were working, right? They were hard at work. And I think that's kind of where the humbleness has to come in, because it's tempting as Christians to say, you know, I have worked hard my whole life, right, since the early hours, serving God's people, serving the poor, serving the marginalized in society, serving God, worshiping in church, serving my church in whatever ways I can. And somebody else who came to church 9 times in their whole life, who's never given a dime to charity, claims to be a Christian, right? We get tempted to say that, but that's really no different, is it? I mean, it's the person who came first thing in the morning saying, why did the guy who got here an hour ago get paid the same as me? Why do they get the same grace that I do? Not because we're not all called to work, but some of us don't answer that call. Actually, Jesus goes in this a little bit more in depth a little bit later. The crowd was gathered around Jesus, and the Pharisees were looking for an opportunity to trip him up, right? They've been trying this forever. They finally got it. We know how the story ends. They finally got their chance, but not yet, not today, not in this moment. They said, hey, Jesus, where do you get your authority? Right, what they wanted him to say was, from God, right? Because that's blasphemy. You're under arrest. The penalty is death. We're done. It's taken care of. No more Jesus. He didn't say that, though, did he? Right? So they had locked him in to an impossible dichotomy. He has two answers that he can come up with. Either my authority comes from mankind because people love me and they trust me, and so they give me authority, which makes him not from God. Or my authority comes from God, thus I'm a blasphemer, and you have every right to kill me, right? So he kind of is stuck, except that Jesus is really good of pulling a three out of a one or two answer, right? So he does. He says, all right, fine. I'll tell you what, I'll give you the answer if you can answer me this. Where does John the Baptist get his authority from? Now here's the thing. The Pharisees hated John the Baptist just as much, and they didn't get along either. John the Baptist had just as many harsh words for the Pharisees as Jesus did. This was not their buddy. So they get together and they say, oh, man, how do we answer this one? Right, because we're outnumbered. If we say it came from man, which is a way of saying that it's all in his head, then we're goners. We can't tell this crowd of people that, remember, even when Jesus was arrested, they had to do it secretly, right? They had to do it later. They caught him in the act, but they weren't going to arrest him there because of the crowd. They were scared to death of the crowd, so they can't say it's from man. But if we say it's from God, that'll please the crowd, but then Jesus is going to ask us, then why don't you believe him? Why would you challenge John the Baptist if you believe that his authority comes from God? So they give the most genuine, most honest, most true answer the Pharisees had ever given in their entire scripted lives. Every bit of scripture we have, they give the most genuine answer ever. They say, we don't know. Right? That's the answer that more Christians, I think, should learn to give. All too often, we need to have the answer. We have to have the answer. Good theology is very important. We need to be studying theology. We need to be studying the scriptures and God and understanding more. But there will be moments in our lives where whether someone asks us the question or we begin to wrestle with something ourselves, and we have to have the humbleness and the meekness to say, I don't know. I want to find out. I want to learn. I want to know. I'm going to pray. I'm going to grow. But right now, I don't know. Right? It's a really tough thing for us as Christians to do. I think a lot of that actually comes from Jesus, right? And don't get me wrong here, but Jesus was great at this. There was no question he didn't have the answer to. Right? Even in a question where A or B are the answer, he answered C. Right? He was really good at always having the right answer. And so we begin to think that we need to be the same way whenever a Pharisee or a non-believer or a believer or someone who otherwise is challenging our ideas challenges us, we have to have an answer, even if that person is ourselves, right? Even if we hear something that challenges an aspect of our faith, we feel like we have to have the answer, but maybe it's, I don't know, let me think about it, let me read about it, let me pray about it, let me grow in this moment. But all too often, we think we have to have an answer. So Jesus gives us another parable, right? One last parable. He says, look, a father's got two sons, right? How easy is this? A father's got two sons. One of them, he asks them both. He says, but asks both of them. He says, I want you to go out and work in my field, right? Nothing unusual here, a dad asking his two kids to go do some chores. The older son says, I don't want to. But he thinks about it and does it anyway, right? It's the right thing to do. He doesn't want to, but it's the right thing to do. So he goes and does it. The second son is basically my little brother because he was really good at this. He'd say, yeah, sure, I'll do it, and then sat down. Right? I don't know if any of you ever met kids like that. You know, yeah, always say yes. Always say yes, because that's the right answer. They just didn't actually do it. So he says yes, but he doesn't do it. So Jesus asks him, which one did his father's will? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? It's the first one. Well, what just happened? The second one gave the right answer. He had the answer. He said it right. He got the right answer to the question. The first one got the answer wrong, but did his father's will. Likewise, as Christians, we're called... We need to get the answer right at least some of the time. I mean, don't take away from this that anti-intellectualism or rejecting the Bible is a good thing, right? It's not. We need to grow and learn more about our faith. But the most essential part is that we live our faith. If we get an answer wrong, but we get the actions right, we're going to be in a very good place, right? God is more concerned that we do his will than we are that we get the answers right all the time. And it comes from the same place as the parable of the vineyard, humbleness. Humbleness is the message of Jesus Christ as we head into Lent, as we head into recognizing that you and I have received a gift that we have not earned and do not deserve. As we head into the cross, we recognize this incredible gift that we've been given, and the only way we can receive it is through humility. Being humble enough to say that sometimes I don't have the answers. Sometimes it's not fair that others receive grace the same way I do, without having done the things that I've done. But I am excited and happy that they've received that grace. Louis C.K. Penned the quote, "The only reason you should ever be looking in your neighbor's bowl is to see if they have enough, never to see if they have more than you." Right? The only reason you should be looking in your neighbor's bowl is to see if they have enough, never to see if they have more than you. What would happen to the world if our world stopped focusing on whether or not the guy in front of us got more denarian than we did and started looking behind us and making sure that the guy behind us was going to get to eat? What would the world look like if the guys who got paid first set aside to make sure everybody else was going to get enough? What would the world look like if we, instead of worrying about whether or not we got what we deserved and other people got what they deserved, isn't it strange how sometimes we're more worried about justice for other people? Like we're okay with getting paid what we get paid, but if somebody else gets paid more than they're supposed to, that really upsets us, right? It doesn't make a difference to us, but we become more kind of even more kind of offended when someone else doesn't get justice the way we think they should. And amazingly, we want grace. If we make a mistake, we want somebody to be gracious and forgive us. If someone else makes a mistake, we want them to get the chair, right? It's amazing what a lack of humility does to the human condition. But God calls us to be humble. So as we head towards Lent, the way I read this is that we're called to be humble. To take our parents' advice from all those years ago, life's never going to be fair, and focus instead on how we can answer God's call in our world. God offers us eternal security and oneness with God, and it's an extraordinary gift that not one of us have deserved. But it's the beyond the generosity of a day's wage. It's the fortune of a lifetime, and it's offered to each and every one of us. Some of us have worked since the wee hours, showing up at 4 in the morning to work hard for our master. Some of us showed up at noon later in life. We might have been Christian our whole life, or maybe not, but we never really did anything about it, right? A friend of mine likes to quote, "I'm a Christian, but I don't make a big deal about it." You know, that's kind of his response to the kind of the nominally Christian, or "I'm a Christian, but I'm not in a bad mood about it," right? Or maybe we showed up at 4:55, 5 minutes before quitting time. We got our shovel and we said, "We're ready to work." But that's okay. It really is. As hard as it is for us to realize, the gift of God is given to everybody. It's given to everybody. Those who worked, those who came in late, those who have yet to work, God offers his grace to them. And our responsibility is to respond to that grace with joy. As we proceed through our Holy Lent, might we start looking at our neighbor not out of want for what they have or malice for what we don't, but out of our concern for what we, through God, could offer them. Amen.